checks and balances, you know.
Welcome to the Wheelbarrow Profits Podcast, Rand Partners Edition.
Hello, everybody. This is Jake Senzio, host of the Rand Partners Podcast, your quick hit for Multifamily Education Weekly. Today, I'm joined with Mr. Rand Partners himself, the D-Dog, Dylan Marma. Dylan, how's it going?
Always making it happen, Jake.
Always making it happen, big man. Today's guest is Lo Hornbuckle. Lo is the owner of several assisted living facilities specializing in Alzheimer's care. So without further ado, Lo, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right, give us a little background on yourself. Tell us how you got started in real estate before we dive deep into this.
So I was kind of the classic W-2 guy that got into single family investments and would manage the leases, the tenants, and the off hours of the business. And then made a mistake of buying a bunch of low income property after being very successful in middle income property for a long time. So I wasn't a slumlord. I was trying to unwind the slumlord tendencies, but frankly, in the market that I was in, it was very difficult, very challenging. So got our butt kicked pretty good in the low income stuff. Still kind of unwinding that. I think the only time we make any money is when we sell one. So that's about how that works.
I've heard that.
My background. Yeah. Apparently, the turnover on the units is kind of high in the low income housing. So,
Yeah, hurting you there. Fun. So give us an overview of the different types of senior living. What are the different the types that are out there?
Yeah, I think it's a good question because a lot of times mainstream media refers to senior housing as sort of one ubiquitous term, and it doesn't really make a lot of sense because you have independent living, which involves no care, essentially apartments for seniors that are maybe looking for common interests, golfing buddies, tennis buddies, things like that. And then you have assisted living, which involves giving some assistance with people's daily needs. And you kind of have memory care, which takes care of people that have cognitive impairment, brain change, dementia, things like that. And then lastly, you kind of have skilled nursing. There's long-term and short-term care versions of skilled nursing. The reason why I say it doesn't make sense to think about it as one industry is independent living is increasing occupancy and skilled nursing is decreasing. So you can't really talk about it as one class because frankly, they're basically funnels for each other, right? Independent living kind of being the initial thing, then you kind of graduate to the levels of care. So those are kind of the basic levels of senior housing. And, I just want to caution against anybody that's reading articles about senior housing. It's probably not a useful term, not really practically.
So why did you choose to specialize in assisted living?
So I think what ended up happening was, I have a background in multifamily and single family, as I mentioned, and I heard about this idea and really kind of fascinated me. So I just stumbled into it. I'm one of those people that's lucky. I kind of stumbled into my passion. I've gone through some personal stuff with my dad, and he had a bad experience on hospice, and that really kind of caused me once I got into the business to kind of remember how I felt when he was kind of struggling, what he was going through. Memory care and assisted living, I kind of got into really by accident. But I just fell in love with it and realized what it could be, realized it was, my background is I was a car dealer. And there's really nothing more of a commodity than selling a new car, right? Because most new cars, you can just get any color, mini make or whatever, especially in certain types. So I spent my whole career basically selling commodities, and, assisted living is anything but that. You can make yourself a commodity if you're not careful. But if you wrap yourself in service or unique selling proposition, you really don't have competition because there's nobody doing exactly what you're doing. And so that's really kind of why I fell in love with the business. It's an opportunity to elevate yourself to be completely different than your competition if you used to.
So when you look at assisted living, what are the different, in multifamily, most of our listeners are very familiar with the different classes, right? You have A class, B class, C class, and D class, right? How do you measure the various classes? I believe it's on a scale of 1 to 5, right? And what does that look like?
Yeah, so the 1 to 5 thing, I think, is probably something that's a metric that's sort of come out of the REL Academy. I don't think it's supported industry-wide or anything.
Okay.
Frankly, I haven't seen any, I haven't seen anything similar to A through D that you see in multifamily and senior housing. Generally, it's talked about as sort of, there's kind of two things, private pay and then, government pay. So that's kind of one version where obviously private pay, someone funds their own care, and government pay is where Medicaid puts the bill. But there are conversations about kind of lower income, middle market, and then kind of affluent. So, care across the country might be $2,500 a month to $10,000 a month. So you have kind of a really big range of costs. Really right now the conversation is basically, who are you targeting? Are you going after the lower market, the middle market, or sort of the more affluent market?
Okay. And in your case, I believe you've done some buying of residential properties and repositioning into assisted living. And I also, from what I understand in our previous conversation, you talked about doing some development. What is your preferred strategy and who is it that you're targeting?
I don't think those two can be divorced from each other. I think that I probably couldn't get bank underwriting if I hadn't done what I'd done in the sort of smaller scale things. Probably some of the hardest loans to get right now are new construction assisted living. Just because banks don't really want to take over those assets. You know, it's like they can figure out how to manage self-storage, maybe they can manage multifamily, but they really don't want to operate an assisted living facility in receivership or foreclosure. So they underwrite the operator really heavily. Everything I've kind of done has been kind of with a plan. And so I've always felt like coming from multifamily, I knew the value of scaling, right? I've been in single family, I've been in multifamily. So I knew that residential assisted living for me was a step to somewhere. It's a really good business. You have to work pretty hard and you can't quite, there's a lot of revenue in it, but you have to kind of get to a scaling point where you have enough beds that you can pay the team to kind of take care of things. The projects that I'm doing now are ground up planned care home communities. So think about land. We build a neighborhood. Instead of a neighborhood that holds families, it's a neighborhood that holds seniors. So instead of 3,000 square foot houses, there are 9,000 square foot houses with 16 beds and 18 baths, right? So I really prefer that strategy because it has instant scaling. You can solve a lot of problems. There are problems with big buildings. There are problems with residential assisted living. We've kind of married the two. So, steal a term, we think we've invented a better mousetrap. And so I think our projects and new development is really definitely on trend. And we'll see more and more of what we're doing, hopefully from us. But we think we really have the signature product class coming online in South Louisiana and North Texas.
Excellent. And we touch a lot on demographic shifts and how that plays an impact on multifamily and any other type of real estate investment. And with assisted living, it is, in many ways, it's a real estate investment. It also is a business first, right? Because there's a lot of service and operation side that goes into it. But tell us about the demographic shifts that are playing into effect on assisted living.
Yeah, so in assisted living, it really hasn't arrived yet. Baby boomers, oldest baby boomer born in 46. So they're 73. And the average age in assisted living is 87. Really, I don't think the baby boomers are really playing a conversation in this. In fact, we're in a little bit of a demographic trough right now. There's a company that sort of does all this research, and their basic argument is over the next couple of years, the people that are actually of age to be in assisted living are passing away faster than they're being replaced. But we actually have a little bit of challenges for occupancy in assisted living for about 2 years, and the demographic trend kind of starts to turn. This business basically becomes the Wild West. Mm-hmm.
What is the target age for assisted living? Would you say is it 80 to 90?
The average age in assisted living is 87. So 87. Obviously that's the average age. And as far as the target age, I have a resident now that's 33. So I have right now about a 71 year gap between 40 resident right now. Mm-hmm. So that's what's kind of interesting about assisted living. We think only of elderly people, but where do people go that have traumatic brain injuries? Where do people go that maybe have early onset, dementia or Alzheimer's at 58? So, assisted living is associated with assisted living for the elderly, but truthfully, it's anybody that needs assistance, right? So it can be somebody with special needs. It can be somebody that's been in a car accident. It really isn't age specific. It can be, but often doesn't have to be.
You just were about to say something becoming the Wild Wild West. In what period of time and why? I wanted to hear you finish your thought there.
Yeah, so obviously the baby boomer demographic is so large. So basically right now, if the oldest baby boomer is 74, then in the next 10 to 15 years, they're going to start aging into assisted living on average. So right now, independent living is starting to attract the boomers, right? So that's why you got, you know, Jimmy Buffett doing Margaritaville. So basically, it's mostly independent living and it's branded, and, you know, baby boomers seem to love Jimmy Buffett for whatever reason. And so independent living is kind of getting kind of frothy, kind of crazy. Assisted living really doesn't feel that impact yet. And so what's going to happen is the boomers start to age into assisted living, the demand is going to skyrocket. And so that's really why I think it's going to happen, is that basically we're just not going to be able to keep up with the demand for the product. And there's just all kinds of limitations. There are not enough operators. There aren't enough healthcare workers. So there's just all kinds of logistical challenges. And so if you've been doing this for 10 or 15 years, when tidal wave comes, you're going to be way ahead of the people that are trying to, like, oh, there's a trend, let me get into the business. And I just don't think that they're going to have much of a chance, because it's a very difficult business. There's a lot of moving parts to it that people really don't understand. And a lot of people have the false mentality, if you build it, they will come. And that's, you couldn't be more off base. I mean, most every major city right now is overbuilt for assisted living. That's why we focus on secondary and tertiary markets. But that supply that's oversupplied right now will eventually be insufficient to meet the current demand. It's just, it's got to kind of play out. So the next 2 to 5 years will be really interesting in our business, because I think a lot of people that have been sort of maybe a little too cocky have been building things. They don't really have an interesting story to tell. They're just building commodities. They're going to struggle. You're going to see, I think, some places go in receivership. You're going to see some foreclosures. Maybe a lot of acquisition opportunities. And then, you know, probably about 5 years from now, things will kind of level off a little bit, and then we'll start to skyrocket. And that's when it's going to get really, really nuts. And it's going to be very difficult. And it's not just the business side. I mean, the government has to kind of do some things. Like, we have a healthcare worker shortage that's going to affect hospitals, assisted living, all that stuff. We have a huge shortage on direct care workers, nurses, CNAs, caregivers. And frankly, the only solution right now is immigration. Because you have a dual demographic trend. You have people that are aging into assisted living, but you also have the typical demographic to work in direct care are women, and at a certain age range. And they're not growing at the rate that the people that need care are. So at some point, we're going to have to say, okay, we don't have enough nurses, caregivers, you know, whatever. And we're going to have to bring in population that wants to do the work from somewhere. We just don't have enough people. So it's just going to be a really interesting time in the business. There's going to have to be some fundamental reckonings, both with the market and with government policy, to allow labor to flow to a problem.
When that hits, how long do you see it riding out for? I mean, is it a 5-year stay for these folks? Is it a 10-year? How long do you?
Well, the average stay in assisted living, according to Genworth, is about 37 months. But you know, a generation is usually 18 to 20 years. So, you know, I don't know. I haven't gotten enough into the data to see, like, if the baby boomer trend is stronger in 54 or 62, right? Yeah. I don't know the answer to that. But so it's a 20-year demographic. And what's interesting is the millennials are actually bigger as a group than baby boomers are. So you have another wave kind of coming. But, you know, obviously there's going to be a big gap between those.
Yeah, yeah. It's almost like a 30-year runway right now. You got a 10-year lag with a 20-year run-up and then probably a dip.
Yeah. And then, yeah, exactly. So, I mean, what's interesting is you're probably going to see all these places that become assisted living and they get converted back to something else. And then 20 years later, they get converted back into assisted living.
Interesting.
We're just going to keep repurposing stuff. And there's a lot of, like, people that are repurposing all kinds of stuff. Like, basically every day my feed is full of some, like, I'm turning this into assisted living. It's like some horrible idea. And it's because somebody mistakenly thinks that it's the real estate that matters. And that's not really what necessarily matters. So it's like, I'm going to convert this Sears into an assisted living facility or this hotel, or there's so many, like, just some of them work fine, but if the building isn't really designed to care for people, you can imagine things like sight lines and just the ability for a caregiver to stand in one location and see really far. That stuff is really important if you're going to try to care for somebody. So some of these conversion ideas are sort of not really well thought out, in my opinion. Some of them are fine, but some of them are
all right, let's take a quick time out to hear from our sponsor.
Here at Rand Partners, we believe in partnering with professionals while investing into multifamily. There's a huge learning curve and a lot of time that goes into quality multi-million dollar apartment complexes. We offer the opportunity to create true passive income through partnership. Earn while you learn through our monthly webinars and detailed quarterly updates. We offer a high level of communication, transparency, and target north of a 15% average annual return on each investment. To partner with Rand through investing with us, visit randpartnersllc.com to register for our investor portal, view upcoming deals, and set up a call with our team.
All right, and we are back. Dylan, do we have any questions from the website or Instagram today?
So we have a question from General Rick here in the office about assisted living, and her question is, what are the main services and activities that you offer within assisted living, and how does that differ from those offered in independent living?
Yeah, so I mean, they're both actually centered around a social model. So most states, assisted living is non-medical. So the activity is probably pretty similar, except I would imagine most of the activities in independent living are, and it's not my business, so I wouldn't necessarily know, but most of them are more like, you know, happy hour and, you know, we're going to go we're going to have a group exercise class. There's less of that in assisted living. More of it is because, you know, if someone's in assisted living and they're cognitively aware, then they almost always have some mobility problem, right? So they're in a wheelchair, they use a walker, bad back, whatever the case may be. So a lot of the activities are centered around, you know, lifting mood, lifting attitude. So there's, you know, games you can play. There's events you can schedule. You can bring in music. You can bring in, you know, church services, things like that. So I wouldn't say the activities are wildly different, save for the fact that most people in independent living still have their car, still travel places, whereas people in assisted living and dementia care are much more bound to the facility. They don't, especially memory care. Assisted living, some people still drive, but it's relatively rare. Most people, if they can't care for themselves at some point, have given up their driver's license or their car because some of the same challenges that cause them to need care are also reasons why they probably shouldn't be driving, according to their doctor. So there are occasionally people in assisted living that have their car, but it's kind of rare.
So it sounds demographic. It sounds like many of the activities may be, you know, somewhat the same, maybe not as many social activities going on in assisted living as, say, independent living, but at the same time, assisted living sounds like you have a higher level of service from a, you know, from a caregiver perspective, right? You're going to have more staff on site. I believe it's 24/7 staffing and you know, more helping out with the daily activities.
Yeah. So independent living by their licensure in most states can't have caregivers, right? Because then they're basically operating as assisted living. So independent living is essentially apartments either that are age restricted oftentimes. So there's kind of active adults. So just picture like these communities where maybe they buy a house or they buy a townhouse, and then there's a golf course or a tennis course, and they're age restricted. Some of those age restricted properties are 55 and up. So these are pretty young people. So, I mean, you know, you think about the average 55-year-old or 60-year-old, I mean, they're, you know, they're very vibrant. They don't have, you know, these health, a lot of them don't have healthcare challenges. They're simply just choosing to affiliate with people they see as like-minded or in the demographic. I mean, so independent living sort of runs a spectrum of like 55-year-old people that are like super tan playing tennis to like people that are like 90 and really should be in assisted living, but they're just kind of holding on for as long as they can. And so independent living will bring in home health. They'll bring in other providers, try to maintain their census for longer, but they can't provide any direct care at all. So very different business. One really is senior housing, and one is like caring for seniors, kind of being the difference between the two.
Right. Well, very good. I think that pretty much hits everything that we wanted to cover on today's show, Lo. But we appreciate you being on the show and joining us here. Where can people get a hold of you if they want to learn more?
Yeah, sure. So our website is thesageoak.com. So thesageoak.com. So that's the name of the company. And my email address is lo@thesageoak.com. You know, what I always tell people on this sort of part of the show is you know, if they have a question about a loved one, maybe need a little assistance, if they're in a market that I know somebody in, happy to refer. If they want to learn more about how to potentially invest in senior housing, feel free to reach out. Really, any questions they have, I'm happy to help any way that I can.
All right. Well, excellent. And appreciate you sharing the insight here. And I know we've had a couple conversations in regards to the subject. So, you know, we've learned a lot from you and really exciting stuff that you have going on. So again, thanks again for joining us. To our listeners, thanks for joining us on today's show. Remember, if you have any topics you'd like to learn more about or questions you'd like us to answer on the next show, you can go to randpartnersllc.com in the top right corner, click on podcast, ask us anything. And we look forward to continuing to bring some value your way. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you all very much.